Let's see, my next case is Gary, I think is probably how they say it. Thank you versus Commercial Research. Let's see, Mr. Root, you are going to be representing yourself in this case, is that right? I need to stand up if you will, please, sir, when I'm talking to you. Is that right?
Yes.
All right, you can have a seat. And who's going to be representing Commercial Research?
James R. Wolf, registration.
Mr. Wolf.
582, Your Honor.
Thanks very much. All right, we have set this case for 3 minutes. Now, what that means is that each side has 15 minutes. So you have 15 minutes, Mr. Wolf, you have 15 minutes, Mr. Wolf. Mr. Root, you have the opportunity to have a rebuttal, but you need to keep track of your own time. You'll be able to do so by looking at the clock, looking its way down from the podium. All right? Whenever you're ready, you can go ahead.
We're here because there's a section of the law creating health savings accounts. Title of that, Section 12, is Tax Incentives for Health and Retirement Security. According to some of the canons of interpretation, where two or more requirements are provided in this section, and it is the legislative intent that all the requirements must be fulfilled in order to comply with this statute, the conjunction "and" should be used. That's according to Sutherland. Using the word retirement is plain, and it is not a mistake that the word retirement is one of the two purposes of the Act. Just as the words tax incentives is plain. Incentive is defined as something that incites to action, motivates, or encourages. What are the incentives? First, contribution of the plans remain a reduced tax of income by the amount of the contribution. Second, money in the plan may be used for medical expenses without penalty or tax amounts used for specifically allowed medical needs. Third, money in the plan may be used for any reason without the 20% penalty after reaching the age of 65, the age of Medicare eligibility, though the money withdrawn is regarded as taxable income. Fourth, money in the plan may go tax-free. And five, there is no age in which you must begin withdrawing from the plan. This is, in fact, one of the distinctions between this HSA and IRA. In an IRA, you must begin withdrawing at age 70 and a half, where there are penalties. What else says this is intended to be used in a retirement? A, you cannot contribute to the plan once you reach the age of Medicare eligibility, that is 65, and so presumably retired. And the law specifically allows for use of the plan to pay for Medicare supplementary insurance policy. Insurance is not allowed until you reach the age of 65. You can have a high deductible health insurance plan before that, but no other supplementary plan. This last item points to the thinking behind the law, which is specifically to pay for health care and retirement, at least one of the two purposes. Title 12 is part of legislation which modified Medicare and most notably provided a prescription drug benefit for Medicare beneficiaries who could not afford prescription drugs. The manifest intent of the legislature seemed plain as an HSA is patterned after incentives, details, trustees, record keeping, and reporting accountability of an IRA. The similarity of form and details is what first struck me when a debt collector attached my HSA after bankruptcy. My response was, they can't do that. An HSA is like an IRA.
Mr. Ryan, can I ask you a question? Go back for me a little bit in terms of how you established this HSA, so maybe I can understand your last comment that it is like an IRA. So how did you pay into that over a period of time, or how was that established?
An HSA is basically established mostly with people who are financial institutions which are already prepared to handle IRA accounts. banks which handle IRA accounts and things like that.
So what did you do? Did you pay into this? Did you create a separate bank account then?
With my employer, I went for a high deductible insurance policy and an HSA account. At that time, it was Alpine Bank. My employer exclusively used Alpine Bank to hold HSA accounts.
Right. Okay, and so a little bit of your pay each month then went into that account? Is that
yes.
How that happened?
And as a balancing for taking on the additional financial responsibility, the company contributes an amount to balance basically the financial responsibility between a high deductible and a low deductible plan. So the company makes that contribution to encourage people to switch to a high deductible plan because there's
it's cheaper for them to get
a financial advantage, and of course all health insurance plans go up by a tremendous amount every year. So
if I'm understanding you correctly, then over time each month just some went to your IRA and some went to your HSA, but you just set them up under separate things.
I work for the Roaring Fork Transit Authority, which has an independent retirement plan. So I can't contribute to an IRA.
Okay.
But yes, I do. I would have contributed to an IRA, and I do have an IRA. So.
Okay. So some of it just would go to that HSA each month.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Root, if I might interrupt you.
Sure.
Before you move on, it looks like this might be a good time to catch you.
Sure.
You mentioned as you were sort of walking through the tax incentives and then also the purpose of an HSA, you said that the purpose of the HSA is to pay for health care in retirement. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that, my sense is that opposing counsel is going to say that's what makes an HSA different, because the purpose of it is to pay for health care expenses, whereas the IRA is set up to replace your lost income. And I was wondering what your thoughts are about that.
It has two purposes. It has, there's always a balance between where you can do with your money to provide for security. And so the balance between having money which is specifically tied to health expenses and money which is generally available for retirement is one you always have to evaluate. And HSA is nice because once you reach the age of Medicare eligibility, when you don't have to pay for health insurance policy anymore, in fact, you usually can't. You have that money to help pay for a supplemental policy, or you could decide, if you're healthy, then it becomes generally available for other retirement expenses, which might be health or old age care related, but might not particularly qualify for something to listen to medical expenses allowed in an HSA before reaching age 65.
And so, if I'm understanding you, your point is, at least after age 65, you can use that money penalty-free for any purpose?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, but you would pay ordinary income tax, but not the 20% penalty.
And one can always save money, presumably, and use it after he retires. Would you go into what the limitations are on the HSA in using it before you retire?
Generally, there's a list of medical procedures and expenses which are allowed. It can be fairly long. You can't use it for some more generic things like going to the drugstore. Other than that, it's pretty specific and detailed. And if you withdraw it for any other purpose, then you would pay the regular tax plus a 20% penalty. One particular thing you can't use it for is as security for a loan.
But no age or retirement limitation on its use?
There is no limit, age limit on when you can use the account for medical items, no. Anything else? It's a good time to stop.
Now, you read the Para Amicus.
Yes, I did.
I'd be interested in the reaction of that they can't take a position on this issue.
Well, it was instructive, because I didn't wonder where that language came from, and I thought they answered that pretty well. They said Again, it kind of relates to what I said before. Money spent one place is perhaps not available in another place. And Para and Klein that they didn't want to, or Klein, they didn't want money that went into paying for health retirement to reduce the teacher's ordinary retirement income. So that pretty much explained why they used that retirement language there. I thought that pretty much explained what I had seen in the account, which I didn't understand until they clarified that for me. You know, in the report prepared by the entity which was tasked by the state to look into this matter, they did say that healthcare and retirement is a problem. And I think, you know, Para just simply responded to try to protect the retirement as their first thing. And they didn't want to allow people to contribute to a health savings account. That was their choice. So I thought it mostly just clarified where that language came from to me. And I could understand no one wants to take a position with this retirement plan or not.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Anything else? Okay. HSA, I'm taking away here. But I believe the language interpreted the law of common carriers to form the purpose which you described as the canon nosa turk associates. I'm not sure that last pronunciation is correct. I was amazed when I found the case of Ralph and Jacob and discovered that the tax court and some U.S. courts have ruled that an IRA was not a retirement account. That an individual retirement account is not a retirement account. The Supreme Court had to clarify that a plan which provides benefits in retirement is a retirement plan, even if that plan allows use of the funds for which are called limited carve-outs. Rouse v. Jakeway, the Supreme Court of the United States found that IRAs were similar to other retirement plans, and they gave rights to receive benefits on account of age. Another point of law, IRS Publication 969 pointed out that HSA cannot use the security for a loan. This would be called a prohibited transaction, section 4975 of 26 U.S.C. You cannot use HSA security for a loan without incurring the 20% penalty provided. The problem is created the law of an unsecured creditor is allowed to tax the plan as security for an unsecured loan. Councils noted that the Council for Collection Agencies noted that the General Assembly had not updated the exemption requirements as they did for ERISA qualified plans and later for Roth retirement plans. I checked that out, and it's worth noting that it took 17 years to add ERISA qualified plans to the exemption statute and 5 years to add Roth qualified plans to the statute. I'll save my next 3 minutes.
You may do so. Thank you. All right, Mr. Wolf, good to hear from you, please, sir.
Thank you, if it pleases the court. As I was preparing for today's argument, I've had a lot of time to reflect on why this court may have granted cert in this case on the issue of a healthcare savings account being deemed a retirement account under the Colorado Exemption Statute 1354.102, subsection 1S. I see three possible outcomes in this case. One, the court could determine that an HSA is a retirement account and therefore 100% exempt from garnishment. Two, the court could determine that an HSA is earnings and therefore 75% exempt from garnishment. Or three, the court could determine an HSA is not exempt under any Colorado law. The very definition of an HSA under the Federal Act is an account created exclusively for paying qualified medical expenses at any age. Exclusively in the Act is used no less than three times to define the purpose and the use of an HSA. Throughout the Federal Act, Congress treats retirement accounts separately from health savings accounts. We acknowledge there's similar tax treatment and incentives for both retirement accounts and HSAs. But that acknowledges Congress's intent to encourage people to save in HSAs for healthcare costs as opposed to retirement accounts, which is to encourage people to save for retirement.
I'm having trouble seeing why the argument isn't correct that it has this retirement aspect to it, and in fact, outright encourages that. So your position in any event is that that amount that's left over when a person retires is subject to garnishment. Is that your position or not?
It is our position, Your Honor. At the age of retirement, an HSA is treated specially at that period of time, and it is no longer subject to the 20% tax penalty. But it doesn't become a retirement plan. Under the Colorado exemption statute, the legislature has enumerated 5 retirement plans that are exempt from garnishment. And an HSA is not included in that list of retirement plans, nor does it meet the definition of any of those enumerated retirement plans.
So the exception is not by way of inclusion, it's definitive. Those are the only ones that are retirement plans. That's your position?
It is our position, Your Honor, that they've exclusively set forth in the exemption statute 5 retirement plans, and that's what is exempt from garnishment. An HSA in retirement is no different than any other savings account that an individual could use for their benefit in retirement to pay for the Medicare insurance premiums, to pay for other medical expenses, or to go on vacation. Therefore, we do not feel that a retirement, an HSA, a retirement plan under the Colorado exemption statute, and therefore not subject to 100% exemption from garnishment.
Counsel, if I might interrupt just to ask for a clarification. Are you saying that the exemption statute, because it lists those 5 specific retirement plans, that that is an exclusive list, meaning that if the HSA doesn't appear there specifically, therefore it is not included? Or I'm just trying to understand your interpretation of the text there.
I believe that an account could fall under the different specifications and the different definitions of the listed retirement plans, then it could be considered a retirement plan. In our position, we do not find that HSA meets any of those definition of retirement plan, because in the specific language, it's exclusively to pay for qualified medical expenses at any age.
Thank you.
Which brings me to, could this court find that an HSA contribution is earnings, and therefore possibly subject to 75% exemption from garnishment? 1354.5101, subsection 2A, defines earnings as wages, salary, commissions, or bonus, or funds held in or payable from any health, accident, disability insurance. This section of does not reference an HSA. There's a broader definition of earnings in subsection 2B, which specifically references an HSA in the definition under para for salary. Contributions to an HSA under para are included in the calculation for para retirement benefits. It does not set forth that contributions to an HSA are retirement benefits. They're included in the calculations for determining retirement benefits at a later date upon retirement. Further, the broader definition in subsection 2B is applicable to only 3 specific judgments, none of which are at issue in this case. Expressio unus est exclusio alteris. Therefore, we do not view an HSA to be earnings subject to the 75% exemption. If an HSA is not either a retirement plan or earnings, then we feel the statute is not ambiguous, and this court should affirm the decision of the appeals court. However, if either the exemption statute or the garnishment statute are found to be ambiguous, then we should turn to the statutory construction and legislative intent. It was in 2004 that the legislature amended the definition of salary under to include the para definition of salary as an HSA to be included in the calculation of para retirement benefits.
That's in the para legislation?
That's in the para legislation.
Right, right.
Then in 2007, the legislature again reviewed the Colorado exemption statute and was well aware of the impact that HSA contributions had on the para retirement benefits calculation. And at that time, they updated the exemption statute to include a Roth IRA and an ERISA retirement plan as the enumerated exemptions for retirement. They did not include an HSA in that section of retirement plans, nor did they include an HSA in any of the enumerated exemptions from garnishment.
What would be the legislative policy behind that decision not to include it?
We believe that the legislative policy behind that is they view an HSA as being subject to garnishment and attachment for judgment creditors. Otherwise, they could have easily went through and either made a carve-out specifically for HSAs, if that's what they wish to do, or they could have specifically said an HSA is a retirement plan subject to exemption under subsection 1F. And they did neither of those. Therefore, we ask the court to affirm the decision of the appeals court. Now that's my legal argument. I do believe embedded in all of this is a social good. Is there a social good to finding an HSA to be exempt from judgment creditors? If this court determines that there is a social good, then they must find either the Colorado exemption statute or the garnishment statutes to be ambiguous. And if it determines that either of those statutes are ambiguous, then it opens the door that other similar accounts existing now or in the future will be held to be exempt at the detriment of judgment creditors. Or the court could determine it's not a social good, that rather than finding an HSA to be exempt, could create a special preference for a specific class of creditors, namely doctors and healthcare providers, at the expense of all other judgment creditors.
Now, why would that follow? Track that logic for me.
If an HSA is found to be exempt by this court, then it cannot be garnished by a judgment creditor, and then it is exclusively to be held for the use of healthcare costs and healthcare providers. Right now, it's our position that that's not the issue. That's not the case. That an HSA, although exclusively for the use to pay for qualified medical expenses, there's not an exemption for it. And therefore, once a judgment has been issued by a court and the creditor, judgment creditor, issues a garnishment against those funds, they are subject to garnishment impartial satisfaction of that judgment. As an officer of the Colorado Creditors Bar Association, which filed their amicus brief in this case, I'm personally aware that there is draft legislation being submitted out for review of the Colorado exemption statute to bring it up to date from 2007, from the last time it was reviewed for amendment. As a result, is this a question best left for the legislature to review the Colorado exemption statute now that it is right for legislative review to determine if they want to carve out an exception either as a retirement plan or on its own that an HSA should be held exempt?
Council, has a particular bill been introduced at this point?
A bill has not been introduced, and my understanding is right now there's not a sponsor for it. It was, there was many meetings last session in regards to this matter between the bankruptcy bar, the creditors bar, and the consumer bar in regards to trying to review the different provisions of the Colorado exemption statute, come to some consensus on what that would look like. And my understanding is that is now still going on, but at this point there's not a sponsor and it has not yet been proposed.
And from what knowledge you do have about the concepts that have been tossed around, would that proposed legislation perhaps address this particular issue?
I am not aware of that. I was not party to those meetings, and I don't know whether an HSA is being considered one way or the other, or other retirement plans.
I'm just wondering how all that cuts, because it sounds pretty speculative to me. So we got to take our best shot at what the current statutes say, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. That's what this court gets to decide today, is whether an HSA is either a retirement account and 100% exempt, whether HSA is earnings and therefore 75% exempt, or whether an HSA does not fall within any of the specified exemptions under Colorado law and therefore is subject to attachment by judgment creditors. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Wolf. Mr. Root, you do have some time left, 3 minutes, 5 seconds.
Thank you. I think why has this not been addressed in the legislature? It's happening in states throughout the country which do not specifically incorporate HSAs into the retirement statutes. You know, if you go on the internet, you find this everywhere, but cases like this are coming up. I think it's interesting, perhaps my case is the first one, at least get this far in the state of Colorado. And I think that partially because HSAs are new, combination of HSA and bankruptcy is certainly even a little bit rarer. And generally, I think the legislature acts slowly on things like this. As I mentioned before, 14 years to put a RICE equivalent of qualified plans into the statute, and I think 5 years after the Roth plans made the statute. Again, I would emphasize that I don't think that you can count in the benefits of an HSA as income until they're actually taken out of the plan, then they are taxed as income. I guess that's
well, what about this idea that there's a preferred position for a doctor or hospital creditor?
I don't think that's true. Anyone could, once your funds are available to you, the funds would be available for anyone after reaching Medicare retirement age, but not as any creditor, I don't think. I think that would be a separate point in the law, whether the funds would be available after. I haven't really thought that through. But you could use the funds for anything, for example, a caregiver in late age, or someone to be an assistant to someone who's handicapped. They can use the funds for a lot of the things which would be come up at full age, you know. So I think that's all I have to say.
Any okay. Other questions? No, it looks not. You have a little bit more time because you're finished, Mr. Rubin.
I hope so.
Okay, thank you. Well, I do want to thank you, Mr. Rubin, for your appearance here today, and you as well, Mr. Wolf. We appreciate that, and we're going to go immediately into our next case. So if you could.